something like that. I guess it's the Capital Investment Committee. We'll call the Capital Investment Committee meeting to order now. Today, members, we are hearing the recommendations from the Judiciary Finance Committee and the Environment Finance Committee. First up, Chairman Smith, recommendations from the Judiciary Finance Committee. Welcome to the committee, Chairman Smith.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
You ready to proceed?
We are.
Chairman?
We are. I would like the page to give me a copy of the set of whatever we may
always,
have.
Always helpful to have a copy of what you're presenting.
I think it would be helpful. All right, Mr. Chairman, committee. You have before you our, you'll see on the legal side sheet of paper, a listing of the line items referencing the proposals that we heard in our committee and that we're forwarding on to you. Mr. Chairman, thanks for providing me this opportunity to present you with the binding recommendations that we voted on in Judiciary Policy and Finance Committee. This list that we've given you is a list of the projects that we considered and some of the specific language that was supported by the committee. The first project on the list is $74.891 million for the expansion of the Minnesota Correctional Facility at Faribault. The bond funds will be used to improve that facility and add 1,060 beds. It will also reduce the per diem at Faribault by $8. This project received the highest ranking by the committee, and I would also point out that the governor also ranked this project number one. Because the state is projected to be out of bed space by the middle of this year, and we are currently working on legislation that would toughen penalties for things such as criminal sexual conduct and methamphetamine production, the Judiciary Policy and Finance Committee believes that the Faribault expansion to be the most important project considered by the committee this year. The second ranked project on our recommendations is $19.192 million for a 150-bed segregation unit at the correctional facility at Stillwater. The new SEG unit will replace the current one, which is inadequate for that purpose, and add 150 new beds, as I said, to the correctional system. The third ranked project on the list is $11 million for asset preservation for the Department of Corrections. This money will be used for window replacement and such other things as asbestos abatement, emergency lighting, roof repairs, and tuck pointing. The fourth ranked project on the committee's recommendation list is $350,000 for the expansion of the Challenge Incarceration Program at the Minnesota Correctional Facility at Willow River. The CIP program prepares offenders for successful integration into society and reduces the risk of reoffense. The bond funds will be used to add 24 beds to the program, which will help alleviate the current 200-person waiting list and significantly reduce the per diem of the program. These are the four projects, Mr. Chairman and committee, the four projects that received a ranking by our committee. The remaining projects were all deemed to have merit, but did not rise to the level of the projects that received the governor's recommendation. Note, if you will, that the projects are listed in numerical order. They are not in order of preference. They're in order of the House file number for which they bear. Also, you may note that the committee recommended language on several of the bills. The committee added language to these bills that would require any local or regional jail facility to be publicly owned and operated. These amendments were passed overwhelmingly by the Judiciary Policy and Finance Committee. Most of the members feel that it is important that the correctional facility in this state is publicly owned and operated. Mr. Chair and members, thank you for your time and hopefully your consideration of these requests. And I have Mr. Carter on our staff and myself are ready to try to answer any questions that you may have.
questions by committee members? Chairman Smith, with regard to the Faribault facility, this is a facility that was opened, I believe, in was it 1989, and was opened as a medium security facility. Can you give me any indication as to why the Department of Corrections now wants to make this a lockdown facility when it was originally conceived? It obviously was not intended to be a or designed to be a lockdown facility.
Well, I can't point to any main reason. I believe, Mr. Chairman, and I'm going to ask the Department of Corrections to come forward when I give you my answer in order to be more fully explained as well. Several things. We need bed space in the state. The reason for this project includes an answer to your question. We need the bed space. Currently, the cells at Faribault cannot be locked in the process of addressing the bed space issue, and in the Faribault expansion, that lockup question would be answered. I'm going to ask the DOC to come forward and assist in furthering answering your question. Mr. Chairman, would you restate the question, please?
The question, why are we now changing Faribault into a lockdown facility when it was originally conceived as a medium security facility without the capabilities of being a lockdown? My understanding is that there 48 seg beds were added at some point to the facility, but why are we now changing the total nature of the facility?
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Dennis Benson. I'm a Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Corrections. Back in the mid-80s, as we are today, we were facing a bed space shortage and crisis, and one of many considerations was the Faribault facility, which was downsizing as a state hospital. And for some probably good reasons and other not-so-good reasons, we ended up at Faribault, and we converted it to a sort of a medium security facility. It was classified medium, but again, if you're going to go out and design a new medium security facility, for the most part, it's going to have locked rooms that are probably double bunked. That's what we're building at Lionel Lakes. The K building at Lionel Lakes is exactly what we would build at Faribault, and that's a 416-bed double bunked wet room, which means it has a toilet in it. And that's the way of the correctional world for the most part with respect to medium custody. The rooms are not poured concrete. They're reinforced sheetrock, which keeps the price down. Again, it's locked up at 10 o'clock at night. That doesn't mean it's for the from 7 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night. For the most part, the inmates are in programming, both day programming and evening programming. What this does, if we can lock it down, as I've mentioned in several hearings, for example, the midnight watch at Stillwater with 1,300 inmates takes 18 staff to manage. Faribault with 1,200 inmates takes 35 staff to manage. So just in terms of efficiency, the efficiency factor, the safety factor alone, I think speak for the value and wisdom in designing even a medium custody facility so that you can lock the doors at night. It's much, much cheaper to operate and certainly much safer for the staff. In other facilities like Lionel Lakes, which we can't lock down, you've also heard me talk about a very serious incident in the middle of the night. A sex offender hit a female officer on the head with a radio, drug her into a basement area, assaulted her, and that's the kind of incident that we hope to eliminate going forward in our agency. We have almost half of our population that are in rooms that we can't lock at night. and having worked in this agency for the better part of 30 years, I believe that that's almost irresponsible. And the other factor is the medium custody inmate today is very different from what it was back in the, certainly the 70s, but even the 80s. We have a highly distilled population in our system. We really do reserve our prison beds for those that need to come to prison. We have about 138,000 on some level of community supervision. So the people that are in our system, we need to keep a pretty close eye on them. So I think it's a, I know it's a sound correctional practice to go in this direction. And quite frankly, what we did in 1989, if we could turn back the clock, I don't think we would do what we did.
And when was the plan for the reconstruction of Faribault first brought forward?
Mr. Chair and members, we started working with the Department of Finance, I would guess, probably 3 to 4 years ago. We did an analysis of all of our medium custody facilities in terms of asset preservation needs. And we also looked at all of our correctional facilities in terms of expansion capability. And just in the last couple of years, we started to really zero in or hone in on Faribault as we got the results of the asset preservation studies. They have high asset preservation needs down there, as we've explained in the tour down there. And we believe that it makes the most sense to go to Faribault because they have the expansion capability in terms of land mass. We can erase some of those asset preservation needs. That's the long answer. The short answer is I would say probably 2 years ago we started talking internally about expanding at Faribault. And again, that's driven by where do we need the space. Today we have about 900 inmates classified medium that are serving time in a higher custody facility, either Rush City, Stillwater, or Oak Park Heights, or St. Cloud, and we'd like to get them properly matched with a medium custody facility.
Okay. The other question, okay, I'm sorry, Representative Mahoney.
If you have other questions, you're more than welcome to go ahead.
If this is, I was going to move on to some other questions. So if this is concerning Faribault,
this is some other questions also. Sir.
Go ahead, Representative Mahoney.
This might be for staff, but it also might be for the Chair of Judiciary and Finance. You've got county jails on here, and I'm just wondering, is that, do we at the state level fund county jails? I mean, the Cass County and the Rice County, and I'm not sure whether any of these others are county jails or not. Is that something that we do? I didn't think we took over the jail system in the county yet.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Smith.
Representative Mahoney. Short answer is we don't. We're looking at just these 10 projects, of which some include local and regional jails. And I think that was the significance that the authors of these project requests, for example, well, you've got their names. I think that was the significance. There are regional significance. There was some matching dollars proposed. So it's not just an outright request for state money, either directly or through bonding, so for a local jail, county jail.
Well, Mr. Chair, I see that the committee is kind of neutral on them, or at least they're not listed. And I just, do I take that as that you put those in just in case there was extra money and we wanted to be nice to the counties? Because my understanding is that we've not really, as a state, stepped up and tried to fund county jails one way or the other.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, we know we didn't put the request in just looking to see if you were nice and had money to hand out. Could we get some? Frankly, the Judiciary Committee oversees a portion of the state budget, a percentage of the state budget that far exceeds the percentage of money we're asking for if you put all these projects in. And what we've suggested in our request is that items 1, 2, 3, and 4, the committee, and this was done collaboratively, ranking, appeared as the number 1, 2, and 3, 4 supported requests coming through our committee, recognizing, of course, that the governor's proposal was stamped on this. He considers it of prime importance. The other items that we've listed aren't there just seeing if there's begging money afterwards to go after. But all of these projects, in my personal opinion, as my opinion as the chair, and in the ranking opinion of the committee, appear to all have merit, relatively equal merit, and that's why we've lumped them in after item number four as neutral, in that they all have merit, and we're forwarding them on for your consideration.
Representative Mahoney.
One other question here. I'm looking at the agency priority and the committee priority, and Willow River CIP is listed as an agency priority of 6 and committee priority of 4. I'm not questioning what or why. Just could you give us some details as to how that has shifted? Is there some significant difference between number 6 and the Willow River CIP versus the Red Wing vocational unit?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, I don't have the benefit of looking at precisely what you're looking at. We were dealing with items.
Sorry, never mind.
All right.
Okay, Representative Mahoney, did you have an additional question at this time? Okay. Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To help Representative Mahoney, about 8 weeks ago, my county and myself pulled off the Department of Corrections website their thoughts, their planning, and their future outlook as far as prisons and jails. And at that time, they had done a study, and they determined that regional jails was a good would be a good idea, an excellent idea, to share state funds, regional or county funds, to come together and build regional jails. Since it's been removed from their website, I might add, because they've discovered that we found it, and we pointed that out to them, and the commissioner at that time was not aware that it was on the website. But Department of Corrections has done a study. They did do some planning, and they did recommend that in the future we should do regional jails. That might help you with why. Maybe that was one of the reasons the chairman listed these others, just to say they were okay. But to that other, also to that point that you brought up, that we don't do this, not only Department of Corrections says that it would be a good idea, the governor, in his bonding request through state government finance, which has been eliminated in the state government finance bill, had $15 million in there for local initiative grants. And when the commissioner, when the governor's recommendations were brought before this committee, and they testified, I can't remember which commissioner it was, suggested that this $15 million would work excellent in working with counties or regions to build regional jails. So the governor did have that in his bill, and in my speaking with Dan McElroy last Friday, Mr. McElroy said to me, that will be in the bill in the end. We want that piece very much. So these regional jails being somewhat neutral, but yet on the list of Chairman Smith's committee, will help in the end when we get down to that $15 million in local initiative grants, if Chairman Krinke is so kind as to keep it in the bill or reinstate it in the bill.
Does Mr. McElroy, does he still get a vote now? Because, oh, that's right, he's over.
Mr. Chairman, no, he doesn't, but.
Mr. Chair?
He's a likable guy.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, if I might ask, of the chair, is throwing yourself on the mercy of the chair ever get you very far with the committee chairman?
There's no harm in trying, I guess. That's the. Chairman Smith, could you just give us a synopsis of what these additional items are that starting, I mean, on your neutral list, starting with Red Wing Vocational, just a brief.
Yes.
What they are and what they would include.
Mr. Chairman, I can, and I've come prepared with about a 30-second blurb on each one. And
that'd be helpful.
I'll just run it right by you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House File 1705 Dempsey, the Red Wing Vocational Building. It's a proposal for the design and construction of a new vocational education building at the Minnesota Correctional Facility in Red Wing. The David's proposal, a regional adult detention facility, would authorize the Commissioner of Corrections to issue grants to individual counties or groups of counties or tribal governments to fund a portion of the cost of planning and construction of publicly owned and operated regional adult detention facilities. The individual counties may receive up to 25% of their costs, so this would be a matching proposal. Under the Howes proposal, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Representative Howes, Cass County Regional and County Jail was a proposal to construct, furnish, and equip a publicly owned and operated regional and county jail in Cass County. Adjacent counties could participate by agreement with the Commissioner of Corrections and the Cass County Board. The state would be authorized to make use of available bed space by agreement with the counties. Next was the Bradley proposal for the Rochester Regional Public Safety Training Center. This was a proposal for the first phase of a regional public safety training center in Rochester. It is for a live burning training simulator. According to the project narrative, the facility's primary purpose was to enable experienced fire trainers to provide a safe, controlled, and consistently available environment for area firefighters. The Boudreau proposal dealing with Rice County Jail is a pre-design for a fair, is a pre-design, $500,000 for pre-design of a prison industry building at the Faribault Prison, $10.5 million approximately, to design, construct, furnish, and equip a county jail facility for Rice County adjacent to Faribault expansion. This would have a priority for lease of up to 200 beds in the county facility. The Gunther proposal, Blue Earth Fire and Police Station, would be an appropriation of $642,000 for a grant to the city of Blue Earth for a fire and police station, requiring at least an equal match from non-state sources. Under the Solberg proposal, which would be a county courthouse capital grant, would direct the state to pay for up to 50% or one-half of the cost of capital improvements to county courthouses, facilities used by the judiciary or in support of judiciary functions performed at the facilities for purposes essentially of upgrading safety at the courthouses and at those facilities. The Heidgerken proposal, the DOC minimum security facility at Sauk Center, was a $400,000 proposal for a purchase of a former correctional facility at Sauk Center to be used as a minimum security prison. It had been used as a site for a juvenile correction facility up until 1999, sold to a private party in 01, and now that owner was looking to sell it through this proposal. Finally, Mr. Chairman, under the Rhodes proposal, a hazmat training center, the bill would seek $500,000 in bonding proceeds to fund a grant to the city of Hopkins for the purposes of construction of a regional hazardous materials training facility in Hopkins.
Committee members, any questions for Representative Hausman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my first one is to you. I'm looking at your fiscal conservative credentials and wondering if you have the same reaction that I have to when I see Representative David's regional adult detention facility, Representative House, Cass County Regional and County Jail, Representative Boudreau's Rice County Jail, Representative Gunther, Blue Earth Fire and Police Station, whether you feel we're going to have enough money in the world if we start building every county a jail and every city a fire and police station, and whether particularly as a Ramsey County property taxpayer, if it's good for one, it's good for all here. And to maybe to the committee, the chair bringing this, what was the equity discussion in your committee? if we begin to move in this direction. Was there an equity argument made in your committee?
Ms. Chairman, Representative Hausman, I'm going to answer your question sincerely, and I don't want to sound flippant, but we did consider the times that we're in this state, rather limited bonding, the fact that the state is in need of prison beds, we're in need of cell space. So, and frankly, I think this was every proposal that was referred to my committee, and I chose to hear every one of our bills and give each representative a fair hearing, or at least a hearing. And in part, that's why perhaps we didn't go beyond ranking 1 through 4, and we just ranked them all as neutral, as having relatively equal merit. I think that's the answer.
That's
Chairman Smith, I know you didn't chair the committee 2 years ago, but I'm still a little puzzled. Assistant Deputy Commissioner Benson said that the plans for Faribault were in the works some 3 to 4 years ago. Reading from the bonding proposals from 2 years ago says that this is in the obviously in the budget proposals or bonding proposals from 2002. It says the original construction, this is referring to Faribault, the original construction dates of the building range from 1946 to 1995. New segregation unit industry buildings. Buildings are structurally sound, but preventative maintenance is required. Nowhere did the Department of Corrections ask for any pre-design money. Nowhere did they indicate that there was any need for a major renovation of the facility. So I'm curious as to, and this is, as you know, in our budget or in our capital planning estimates, there is a request to have the agencies look out 6 years into the future so that we can anticipate what capital costs these entities may be bringing forward in the future. So did you have any further discussions with the agency as to why this $100-plus million project is now just blooming on the radar? Why we didn't have any indication as to this type of expenditure coming into the process at this time?
Mr. Chairman, committee, looks like the DOC is here to answer. Frankly, I don't think we concerned ourselves looking for motives. We just looked at this fact that we need bed space in this state, and that this proposal has merit, can fulfill the need for the amount of time we're looking at close range, and secondly, it's the governor's number one proposal, and that was basically all we needed. But the DOC is here if you want additional answer.
Mr. Benson?
Mr. Chair and members, I think what I said is 3 to 4 years ago we started to do an analysis of each of our medium custody institutions to determine the level of asset preservation needs. And that report was, we got the final draft last January, January 8, 2003. In 2000, the year 2000, we opened up the Rush City facility, and population projections at that time indicated that the Rush City facility would meet our needs until probably 2005. But then, as has been happening since 1989, one sentencing enhancement after another, and every year we do the projections and we add to the projections the new sentencing policies that passed, Rush City was not only filled by 2003, but by we're guessing now that by 2005 we're going to need an additional 900 beds. So that's information that we didn't have at that time. I mean, we don't know from year to year what the sentencing enhancements are going to be and what they're going to mean to us in terms of beds. we started this process again 3 to 4 years ago in terms of where will we expand next. And in the last 3 years, we've undershot projections by from 100 to 300 beds a year. In other words, 100 to 300 more inmates arrive than we thought were coming. And again, that's driven primarily by sentencing enhancements, court volume, better law enforcement, a weaker economy, all those things that are very, very difficult to predict. So the moment it became apparent to us that we were going to need more bed space, we moved very quickly to try to find the best proposal, the best solution, the cheapest, the most economical, and one that could meet not only our bed space needs, but drive our daily costs down so that we can save the state literally millions of dollars by dropping our departmental per diem by $8 a day and making it a safer department as well. So you're absolutely right. We understand the rules in terms of trying to look 6 years out, but in this case, we sort of got smothered by intake in the last several years, and it was difficult to predict.
Well, Mr. Benson, I've handed out to committee members what the capital budget requests for Department of Corrections was from the 2 years ago. As I said, there's some over 30 projects on here. Nowhere does it indicate there's an additional need for you have the Stillwater SEG pre-design, obviously, and now you're coming forward obviously with the necessary construction dollars for that, but nowhere in here does it talk about nor in the narrative talk about the need for additional beds. You stated earlier that the medium security inmate today is different than the medium security inmate of 10 years ago. So I guess I'm still curious as to, I mean, I understand what the legislature does sentencing enhancements, but we don't have anything to do with the violent nature of those who are incarcerated. If that has... If the need for lockdown facilities has been growing since the mid or late 70s, I'm just, as I said, this the first that I think that I was aware of, certainly, and I asked Chairman Knobloch, who previously chaired this committee, his awareness that Faribault, a $100 million expansion at Faribault or reconstruction of Faribault, popped up on the radar screen a little more than a year ago. And so how are we supposed to determine what the needs are going forward if an agency such as yours gives us no clue, no indication as to what's happening just a year out? I mean, Chairman Knobloch, are you aware of anything about Faribault prior than a year ago?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I knew they had a little bit of money in for some design work, I think, at the kitchen or something like that down there last time, but I guess I don't recall a big project like this.
Mr. Benson?
Mr. Chair and members, in terms of trying to shore up what we felt were some problems in our agency around dangerousness, I would point to a new 60-bed high-security unit at Oak Park Heights that was funded primarily with federal dollars, but also with a 10% state match, which we did, I believe, 4 years ago. Since then, we also bonded the K building at Lionel Lakes, which I mentioned a few moments ago, to try to get more lockup beds at the Lionel Lakes facility. And as I mentioned again, at that time, we were looking at the asset preservation needs of the mediums. And 2 years ago, we still had beds available at the Rush City facility. A year ago, we came before the legislature and suggested a private regional jail that was killed in conference committee. So it left us in a very, very difficult spot as we moved into this bonding cycle. When that was killed, we literally had a 600 to 800 bed a hole in our bed space plan as we came into this year. And fortunately, we've been able to work out with some county jails and the Prairie Correctional Facility out in Appleton, Minnesota. We're in the process of developing a contract with them, and it's our intention to use county jail space and the Prairie Correctional Facility to shore up that problem that we were left with when we were not successful in getting this private regional facility built last year or approved.
Okay. Representative Anderson, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Either Chairman Smith or the DOC, I'm looking at your asset preservation, and I see that the governor is only recommending you $11 million for asset preservation. And going back on this 2002 report, you had some asset preservation requests of $23 million. I don't know if you received all that, but I'm just wondering what happens, what projects are, with only $11 million coming forward in asset preservation, what are the requests you have here? Looks like you're going to have to pick and choose. What is your priority in your asset preservation request there?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, obviously when we're asking for a large project like the Faribault facility, we have to prioritize as well. And in a department the size of ours, where we literally have 10 small cities, I always call them, we have somewhere between 1,000 and 1,500 residents when you factor in staff. We have a water treatment plant. We have many roofs. We have a fleet of vehicles. We have sewer systems. We have pressured water systems. We have all kinds of OSHA requirements that we're required to comply with. So, again, the short answer is we'll probably use most of that $11 million for roofs. We have a couple of emergency generators that we've been cited on by the fire marshal that we're going to try to fund for safety issues. And we've got some water issues around the agency, too, in terms of sewer systems and pressurized water systems as well. And then certainly we have our share of asbestos issues in our agency, too. So we'll juggle the dollars that we ultimately end up with and try to make the most efficient and proficient use of what we get and shore up those highest priorities. But windows, roofs, emergency generators, asbestos, and water issues are probably the majority of our needs.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, get out in the private sector, and if a contractor or somebody else runs into asbestos, I mean, that basically shuts the whole project down, and you got to do something now, and I see asbestos here, and I'm going, you know, I would think that would be your top priority. I mean, if you have asbestos in any of your system throughout the state, if we can compare ourselves to the private, we should be on top of that, like lickety-split.
Mr. Benson?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, I would submit that I think we are. Much of our asbestos, like in the private sector, is what they call encapsulated. If it's encapsulated, it's not a problem and it's not an issue. But, for example, in the Faribault Tunnel, where there's shifting of pipes and the asbestos is exposed to folks who might have to go down there for repair, you're absolutely right, that's a problem, and we have to fix those issues. But if it's on the glue that's holding a ceiling tile to the seal for ceiling, that's not as much of a problem. So we've had an asbestos survey done in our entire agency, and we have many, many millions of dollars of asbestos issues that we could ultimately address, but we're addressing those that put people in harm's way, whether they're staff or inmates or construction workers or whatever. But there are all kinds of asbestos issues, not only in our system, but I'm sure the state college system and other systems. But if it is in fact encapsulated and is not exposed, it's not deem to be a high, high raging priority.
Representative Anderson, you have a follow-up?
Mr. Chair, I guess with the DOC, with the abatement of asbestos, that will $2 million take care of one facility?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, I don't know that that would take care of a facility, but I think it would take care of our emergency asbestos needs for the next couple of years based on most recent history.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Benson, I would think that would be a priority, and I'd like to see that as a priority for the DOC to take care of. In your asset preservation, make that a priority.
Any further questions? Okay. Any other committee members? Commissioner Benson, just don't need to answer this question now, but if you could follow up, I know that there's this sort of nagging issue of the Bayport water problem that it's been an issue in the past. As I understand, it continues to be an issue. There are people who claim that this is has been caused in the past or is still related to something that the Department of Corrections has done in the past. I'd like to, if you could forward to the committee, the department's official position, so that Representative Murphy, you seem to be smiling down there, but you've dealt with this issue, I presume, before. So. Know the project well, and I'm sure that we'll probably have a chance to discuss it once again, Representative Murphy. So I think it would be helpful for committee members just to have that the department's official interpretation or position on that particular issue, because as I just have this sneaking suspicion that it will be an issue of discussion either here in committee or on the floor or both. So if there are no further questions from committee members, thank you very much, Mr. Commissioner Benson. Thank you very much, Chairman Smith. Appreciate your recommendations.
Mr. Chairman, committee, thank you.
The next members, we have Chairman Osmond with the Environment and Natural Resource Finance Committee recommendations. Chair Osmond, we hope you don't have anything as controversial as Chairman Smith brought forward.
Yes. Well, mine are very logically sequenced, where it kind of eliminates most arguments, but we'll see how it goes. Mr. Chairman and members, the Environment Finance Committee is pleased to present to you a proposal that we have worked very hard on, spent a lot of time. We had a large volume of legislation to listen to and to sort through, and to try and help you in your process, we have kind of provided some documents that you may find helpful. Hopefully you'll find helpful. You have a spreadsheet that is presented to you, and if I can just quickly go across the spreadsheet and show you how this is laid out. We have in the third column the governor's recommendations. Then the center column there, the one that says bills in the Environment Finance Committee, these are the bills that we had not only heard, but we also included portions of them in the bonding bill. But because we did not want to have a double counting of those figures, then we have a column on the far right-hand side, which is the committee recommendations. So if we've included riders concerning bills that were heard in the environment, we then included it in the dollar amounts that are in the committee recommendations. When the second, if you see on the bottom of that page, the governor's recommendation was $144,369,000. That's the same dollar amount that we stayed with in trying to pick up our choices as to present to you for the bonding proposals. The second page that you have
is the other bills that were heard in the committee and the dollar amounts that were requested. Those bills are not included in the in this, but we wanted you to see the overall amount of requests that we had and what we actually dealt with in our committee. And then beyond that, you find a document that is really kind of the draft language of a bill that is in rider form, so that you can see some of the language that would actually be used for the different riders, and that's where it kind of spells out how the dollars would be divided up when you get into a specific category. Mr. Chair, with that explanation, I'd like to start just by going through the departments and agencies and our recommendations. I would like to skip over the Bowser portion when we get to it, because CREP is more of a controversial issue. We have many employees here in the room that are here to answer any questions that you have from different departments. I'd like to get them out of here as quickly as possible. So I thought I'd leave the controversial one to last, if that's okay.
That'd be fine.
All right. The Pollution Control Agency is the first recommendation. It's the continuation of the 1994 obligation of the state to take over the closing of landfills in the state of Minnesota. We had, back in 94, had dollars allocated to that or authorized for that bonding process, and it was then those dollars were to be let out at particular times when the need arose. In year 2000, legislation canceled all those dollars that were kind of standing by, the authorization of standing by. So now we're having to pick up and trying to authorize these on an annual or biannual basis. And so they to keep us up to speed with our obligation on closed landfill bonding is $14 million. That was equivalent or equal to the governor's recommendation. Mr. Chair, if we can, as we go through each one of these, if there are questions, if we could actually deal with those at that time.
Certainly.
On each one of the categories, that would be also very helpful.
Okay. Members, any questions regarding the closed landfill bonding, the PCA's request? Is Chairman Osmond, this was the only request from PCA?
That's correct. The only request they got as far as our committee.
Okay. I don't see any questions, so let's continue, Chairman Osmond.
The Office of Environmental Assistance has, we're a little bit higher than the, in our recommendation and the governor's request. This is a proposal to provide monies for solid waste processing facilities. These locations are areas that we're looking at having waste energy facilities established here in Olmsted, Hennepin counties, or Redwood County. And also I believe there's some out in rural Minnesota that we seems to me I'm missing one name on here. I thought there were four altogether. Lamberton. And because this is a process that's been put together within the Office of Environmental Assistance to kind of make judgments with regard to the how the dollars would actually be allocated, we did not try to prioritize the individual projects, but we did think that they should be accelerated a little bit more than the $4 million than the governor was proposing. I think our committee heard evidence that the more we were able to deal with this, our waste management issues aggressively, the more relief we may be able to provide our landfills and extend out some of their life. And so we thought this was a good way to address that concern.
Representative Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Osmond, sorry, I'm a little, I like that you're willing to take questions along the way, except I was a little too slow, so I want to go back to closed landfills for a second. I understand in terms of the cancellation of the amount that was on reserve in case something happened, and I understand that piece of it. Does $14 million do we have to keep picking this up year by year to keep doing this? And will this cover any sort of obligation we might see in the next 2 years? I guess that's kind of the basic question.
I believe, Mr. Chair, Representative Kelleher, that this is the amount that that is foreseeable and to deal with that issue. But Mr. Reinholz may have some more detail on that. Do you have any? That's correct.
Chairman Osmond, that you're correct. That is the amount that the PCA estimates for the next 2 years. They also have an estimate for future years of an additional $16 million.
Okay.
That total will finish the cleanup at the landfills that the state took over in the program.
Okay.
So we were given that kind of perspective, but we're only trying to take off this portion at this time.
Chairman Osment, maybe you could to follow up on Representative Kelleher's question. What occurs here if this number is not, if it's something less than $14 million? What happens if it's $8 million, $10 million, $12 million? What occurs under the, from your perspective?
It's my understanding, Mr. Chair, that then we would not have the covers going on to the landfills as they are coming to the end of their life, and other types of protections that citizens of the state of Minnesota have been told to expect with regard to landfills. As you recall, the controversy we had a number of years ago where we had landfills, as they were causing contamination, there was also lawsuits that kind of just was occurring all over the place. And the state took on the obligation of cleaning up the landfill problem so that we would not have that where the landfills were in their cleanup process, the larger users, which usually were the big industries and so forth, were then being sued for their materials that they had in landfill. They then were counter-suing mom-and-pop operations, and it was really going to cause economic havoc out there. And so what the state of Minnesota said is that we've all kind of contributed to the problem. We'll all participate in the cleanup. And these the dollars were actually allocated to cover the projected costs at that time. It was because of the 2000 legislation that this issue is coming back before us again.
Okay. Representative Solberg.
Chair, Representative Osment, I remember being involved in that issue at the time. What was the dollar amount that was set aside in 94? Was it $200 million?
Representative Solberg, I believe $90 million, but I guess Mr. Reynolds?
Chairman Osment, $90 million in bonding was set aside at the original program.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Solberg,
how much was spent of that $90 million?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, prior year's expenditures of general obligation bonds is listed at $63,820,000.
Okay, let's try to get on to item number two then.
Questions on the Office of Environmental Assistance, which was the waste management facilities. That was item two.
Again, if you could maybe clarify why you why your committee felt that there needed to be additional dollars there, and were there beside the Olmsted County, are there other specific projects?
That we wanted to leave the selection of the projects and the dollar amounts that go to them as up to the committee. We did not identify specific dollars to any given project, but. The Olmsted County facility, as I understand it, was in the a previous bonding bill that for, I believe, $3.6 million, and it was vetoed at that time. And so we also wanted to indicate some catch-up in that area, and that's why we thought we'd allocate a few more dollars than what the governor had actually proposed, because this is not just taking care of current things. These are actually issues that have been kind of getting backlogged because there's not been enough money to deal with them.
So, Chair Osment, the there is no specified dollars for the Olmsted County project, or how do you? It's listed, but it's not named as a project.
As you see on the spreadsheet, we had a bill that was requesting $4 million just for Olmsted County. We did not specify how much of that would get covered by the 5.8, but we figured it would need to take more than just the $4 million that the governor was asking to really do justice to the request. And so that's the reason we figured that was a little higher priority.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, I noticed on the page 6 of the proposed riders, line 26, that the applicants are eligible if they were on file before September 13th, 2003. How many are on file?
I believe there's four.
And
facilities.
Mr. Chair, did the Office of Environmental Assistance rank those?
Maybe we can have someone from OEA come down and answer that specifically.
I would assume there's a ranking of it.
We know that there is a methodology, but I don't know exactly how they did that.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dave Benke. I'm with the Office of Environmental Assistance. I'm the Strategic Directions Manager there. The prioritization of the projects has not occurred yet. It's a two-step process that we use. We have used the September date that was referred to get pre-proposals in, that we would know the basic land, lay of the land in terms of the numbers of projects and the dollar amounts there. We do need to follow through with final applications, and once we receive an appropriation, if that's chosen to do, we would then request final applications to come in and be able to rank them at that point.
So, Mr. Chair, but you only request final application for those that have been on file?
That is correct.
And, Mr. Chair, there are four?
Correct.
You want to just give us so edification of the committee, what those four are?
Mr. Chairman, certainly. There are four projects that are currently on file with the office. The first is to Olmsted County for a third line for a waste energy facility. They have requested a grant of $4 million. The second is for the city of Red Wing, who has requested a grant of approximately $2 million, and that is for a materials recovery facility in addition to their waste energy facility. The third project is Hennepin County, which is approximately $1.5 million, and that is for their household hazardous waste and transfer station citizens drop-off project. And the last is to the Redwood County or Lamberton project, and that request for a new waste energy facility came in at $15 million for the grant request.
I can, with the amount of money recommended by the committee, I can understand how you could perhaps fund two or three. Pretty hard to fund a $15 million project, isn't it?
Mr. Chairman, each one of these projects requires matching, and in terms of eligibility, projects are only entitled to a certain amount. The Olmsted County facility, I believe, is at around $33 million in terms of total. The Lamberton facility at about $38 million. So you can see that the grant amounts are less than the total amount of the facilities, and therefore a partnership with the state of some form is really what we're looking at. Maybe not the exact grant amount that's been requested, but something to get close and move the projects forward.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you very much. Let's move on, Chairman Osmond.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go to the Minnesota Zoological Gardens next. This is a request that that is below the governor's recommendation. Governor recommended $19 million for the new exhibit that they are proposing. That we had a bill in committee for $48 million. We're recommending $18 million. We believe out of the $19 million that $1 million was going to go towards building a warehouse that vendors actually would use, and we felt that the vendors could build that themselves. The asset preservation portion was requested at $6 million. We're recommending $2 million. We feel that we just have to cut down on the amount of renovations and restoration activities that would be going on in the zoo. We felt that $2 million over the next 2 years would meet immediate needs. And then there's the debt forgiveness provision that is in there. It's recommended at the governor's recommendation. This is a unique state facility. It has lifelong educational and recreational activities for all ages of the families. It's one of the very few in our state that really has that type of utilization from toddlers to the elderly. They do, they're very entrepreneurial, and they're trying to cover their costs. They've been quite successful in covering about 60% of their operating costs, 40% that does still continue to be budgeted to cover their areas, but it's hopeful that And it's our expectations that with new exhibits and new activities that they will be able to generate additional funds to become even more self-sustaining. Dakota County, which is originally dedicated the land out there for that facility, is very much in support for continuation of this activity. They've had good private sector support. They've had the new family farm facility which opened up out there that was donated activities, and we're very interested in maintaining this state facility.
Chairman Osman, with regard to debt forgiveness, as you are very well aware, when projects are authorized, there are many times commitments from non-state sources, private sources, in order to garner the support of the legislature to fund projects. Why, in this case, do you believe that the debt forgiveness, in other words, the concern would be here that we now are entering into a situation of forgiving debt on a previously authorized project? My concern is precedent, that we now start the cascade of it could be the Guthrie, it could be the Children's Theater, it could be the Duluth Aquarium, it could be the University of Minnesota, that now come back in and say, well, that private contribution that we had and hoped we were going to get didn't come through. The project moved forward. We built it. Now we're in a difficult position of paying off the debt. Do we, Mike? So your response to that concern about the cascading effect that we could now have?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. The biggest difference I see is that those that you listed are not state agencies. This is a state agency that's actually performing a function on behalf of the state of Minnesota, similar to our Department of Transportation or other activities that we have in the state, where we actually do service and provide activity for citizens around the state. But it actually is a state function. When the it was hoped that the dollars that would be coming in from the activities in the past would be able to cover some of those and actually repay back some of those activities, and we feel that it's actually in our best interest now to get this state agency to be even more self-sustaining, is to take over that particular obligation, and because it's really unique that we would ask any state agency to try and repay their capital costs. But I have with me Mr. Emke from the zoo that may be able to provide you a little more insight on that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I'm Lee Emke. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Zoological Garden. I think the question's been answered pretty completely, that we are a state agency. It's a fairly unusual situation for state agencies to be asked to pay back capital improvement costs.
Director Emke. Minskew. Okay. The chairman said that we didn't ask other state agencies or entities to share in debt service. We request that Minskew pay one-third debt service on all their major capital improvements, as well as Department of Health. We've done it with ag projects, so it's not unprecedented that we ask state agencies to come up with a share of debt service for particular projects. But yeah. I interrupt you just to say that there is precedent in requiring debt service from other state agencies. So, and excuse me, continue.
One-third would be an improvement.
I didn't say that.
I guess the other comment that I would add is that since that agreement was reached between the legislature and the zoo, conditions have changed, and the state subsidy to the zoo has decreased significantly, especially over the last 2 years, to the point where what is currently about $1 million a year annual repayment of those bonds is a significant burden to the zoo, given that other state sources have declined by a similar or, in fact, greater amount.
But Mr. Emke, let me, I wasn't intimately, I wasn't on the Capital Investment Committee at the time, wasn't directly involved in the discussions, but I remember that I believe at the time that the Discovery Bay, is that what it's called? Like, what's the, am I correct, Discovery Bay?
That's correct.
Proposal was before the legislature, was also about the time that the Mall of America was talking about bringing an underwater exhibit or constructing an underwater exhibit there. The issue was raised that, my gosh, how are you going to compete with the Mall of America and their privately funded underwater exhibit? And so were those people correct at the time when they were foretelling of the future, saying how is the Minnesota Zoo going to compete with the Mall of America's underwater world?
Mr. Chair, I was involved not even...
You weren't even here,
not at
so.
All, so I'm not sure what the discussions were at the time.
Then you can give us a perfect quarterback, Monday morning quarterback perspective.
It's quite easy to be critical of that decision in retrospect. I think having two aquatic facilities in the same metropolitan region clearly impacts the attendance levels and the revenues generated. I would also add, in my opinion, that development was oversold by the zoo at the time, primarily because we already had dolphins in the collection. This was not a new species that was being added to the zoo. It was an improved facility, but it wasn't a major new attraction. And that is one of the things I think that differentiates this current request from that one, is that we are looking to add species we know have public appeal. And in addition, the business plan we generated to support the new operation is a far more conservative estimate of new revenues and new attendance.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Emke, we've talked, and I've encouraged you to always pursue more entrepreneurial-type ventures, that your core function is about animals, and that maybe there are some things that you could privately contract out. What things, or what's an update on that? Where are you at with that as far as some of the different things that you've been privately contracting out?
Mr. Chairman, we have done significant changes in our enterprise programs over the last couple of years, and probably the most significant just this past year was to outsource our gift store operation, previously operated by state employees. We've now found a vendor who's come in and will guarantee us a profit margin better than we ever experienced before, and additionally has invested over $300,000 in new capital improvements to make the store work. Another example is our food operation, which has always been privately contracted, but we did a competitive bidding process, and we've now moved from several years ago, our profit on that operation was about $150,000 annually. Today it's about $500,000. So we're looking, as you say, to move and focus on our core activities, which are animal care, exhibition, and education, and where possible find other experts or other vendors to come in to provide services where we don't have that expertise.
Any further questions regarding for Dr. Emke or the questions in general regarding the zoo? Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate you being here. Chairman Osment, let's continue down the list.
Okay. Metropolitan Council request for Metropolitan Regional Parks. The governor's request is $7 million. We had a bill that was requesting a little over $10 million, and we settled to continue to recommend the $7 million to this committee. This is for acquisition, rehabilitation, development of parks in the seven-county metropolitan area. I'd like to also note that we are other activity that's going on with regard to what LCMR has been doing is trying to also have us get some definitions for rural regional parks, and so we'll be able to actually start to, and hopefully in the next year or two, be able to really give some comparisons as to the type of support that the state's been giving for the metropolitan area, because it's high population, and try to do some equivalent activities for those needs out in rural Minnesota. But right now, this is a request for a metropolitan area.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, there's generally been a balance between metropolitan parks bonding proposal for improving and the what we call the state park system. And I bought into that years ago. Can you tell me from state parks how much is being recommended?
Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg, I believe the state park acquisition recommendation we have is for $2 million, and the state park building developments will be for $5.8 million. We'll get into that when we get to the DNR proposals.
So the balance is a $7 million balance is off of five.
Let's see. But Mr. Reinholz, why don't you?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, in the Metropolitan Council grant, the acquisition dollars and development dollars are just listed as the one. In the state parks, they're in the two. So you really, the state parks are getting bonding of $2 million plus 5.8, so 7.8.
Oh, 7.8. Okay, I was reading it wrong. Thank you.
We try to be very fair.
Representative Howes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Osment, my question may have been answered just previously, but you know, again, the balance of metro versus rural, and I see the Metropolitan Regional Parks was $7 million, but if I look a little further, Metro Greenways is $1 million, and it's kind of, in my mind, kind of one and the same. It's metro dollars for green space, yes. Kind of the way I read it. So it's really $8 million when you add the other portion, I believe it's the Hoppe bill. And I see $1 million that was a house bill for state park acquisition, but to me it doesn't appear to be fair to rural Minnesota, especially with the fact that we also were zeroed out with reforestation money, which I look at as asset preservation. Again, I support the metropolitan regional parks, but I don't support they're out of balance.
Okay.
I see that they're out of balance.
Mr. Chair, Representative Powers, when we get down in Department of Natural Resources, we'll probably be able to directly address that concern. But it would be when we start to add up all the WMAs and the trails and so forth that really are essentially rural Minnesota activities, you'll find that we really have tried to balance things out, and there's a significant amount of investment that we're proposing to go into the rural area. I haven't really taken time to sit down and really figure it out dollar for dollar, but I would suspect we're hopefully giving you the support for that area that exceeds what's going to seven county area, because we're talking about a much larger area that is of significant importance to all of Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative House.
Follow-up, Representative Tingelstad did help me find it, but of the 5.8 that is looked at as state park and recreation area building development, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, there's $1.5 million for a visitor center in Grand Portage State Park, and there's $1.3 million for development of the Big Bog State Park recreation area. I look at these as new ventures, new things we're doing, and again, we're not... Again, I go back to asset preservation, conservation easements, which I think are far more important than building new visitor centers that probably won't be visited by a whole lot of people.
But, Chairman Osment, you want to respond?
Well, we had a little different testimony from Representative Lindgren and Representative Dill on that issue. I just assume they take a conversation with Representative Howes outside and see who gets settles it. So.
Representative Osment, Mr. Chairman, I'll be glad to do that.
I really don't have a response directly, Mr. Chair, on that. I know we tried to balance things out best we could, but we did try to pick out projects based upon merit and did not try to focus things based upon region.
Okay. Representative Solberg, I'm...
Mr. Chairman, just one comment, and that is with maintenance, we don't want the wildlife management areas. That just shuts us down. From hunting and fishing and so forth.
No, Mr. Chair Osmond.
Slank.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg. Wildlife management areas actually preserve the hunting activities. They're open for hunting. They're heavily supported by our sporting organizations. That's the reason why we were so thrilled when the governor came in with such a high amount. So.
Okay. Representative Anderson, we're on the Metropolitan Regional Parks. We're not on all of the DNR list yet. Yeah, so.
Not yet.
I'm on parks, too.
Okay. Representative Anderson's for parks. Okay.
I didn't say that. I was just putting words in my mouth.
Hang in there.
Representative Osmond, the regional park system, how does the request here compare to money for, like, say, a city park within the seven-county metro area? I mean, are there any money that goes towards cities' requests, like the Minneapolis, the Brooklyn Parks, the Shorewoods, or something for... Or is it totally, that they totally separate?
This money is for the regional park system, which would be separate from your city parks.
Is there money that
and or other county parks? Representative Tingle said probably has more information. She's a real expert on our metropolitan parks, so you may want to, if she could maybe help me out on that if I'm inaccurate.
Representative Tingle said, you want to respond to Representative Anderson?
Chair. And Representative Osmond, you know, I think in the book it clearly defines it, we're under the section called Metro Parks or Metro Council. But basically there's a certain amount of acreage that the parks need to have in order to be considered part of a regional, metro regional park. So it is different from city parks.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Representative Osmond, is this going to purchasing more land for regional parks? The $7 million?
The Representative Tinglestead may have that also. It can be part of it. Most cases we're talking about in holdings. Regional parks may have some.
Members, if you look in your budget books under the Metropolitan Council on page 11, it has a proposed project list as follows. The agency which oversees the park, then it has land acquisition and second category of park rehabilitation.
So is that a yes?
Then it goes on, I'm sorry, then on the following page it has development projects. So it has there's a rather extensive list. Representative Anderson, and I'm sure that, again, that since Representative Tinglestead, this was a bill introduction by her, that she would have lots of additional information. If you wanted to stop by and visit her, I'm sure she could offload lots of folders and color photos and the like, I'm sure.
Black
and white photos, I'm sorry, no color. All right. If there are no additional questions regarding Metropolitan Parks, let's move on.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to go down to Department of Natural Resources. Our first item is the flood hazard mitigation grants. The governor recommended $20 million. We're recommending $23.6 million. That's because we had two proposals, one from Representative Pennis, one from Representative Dempsey, that we have indicated should have support, and that we are added those dollars to the governor's request. So there's also rider language then in the bill that would ask for prioritize Red Lake Watershed District and the Cannon Falls projects.
Questions, members, on flood mitigation grants?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Solberg.
The flood hazardous mitigation grants, are they eligible for federal funds?
Mr. Reynolds?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, a large number of them are. In fact, the DNR estimates that at this state funding will bring in $83 million worth of federal funds.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Solberg.
Generally speaking, it's been my understanding state obligation of a quarter, local obligation of a quarter, and federal 50%, or maybe it was 60% federal and 15% local and so forth, some local grants. In all of these, have the local units of government participated? Because we've sometimes waived that depending upon the...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, the projects that were listed in the DNR grant expect to have local participation. You'd see also in the rider language on page one, it does allow a reduced amount for areas that meet certain medium household incomes.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I read that with interest, and I'd like to know what the effect is on different parts. I mean, does that reduce East Grand Forks or Ada or Oak Park, Fort Township, or Dawson? Does it reduce all of them? And what is the cost?
We'll bring up Mr. Lockesmull from the Department of Natural Resources to answer your question.
I hope he feels it fares better than what he did in the previous committee.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, can you repeat the question?
I found with interest the reduction of the local share, and I don't have any necessarily against that, but I would like to know the 2% that type of thing, of which flood mitigation projects are going to be affected by that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, the reason for that language was on a large federal project, even the non-federal share, where typically you get 65% federal money and 35% non-federal. In the base program, we would split that non-federal share between the local government and the state. And for a large project, the biggest one that's ongoing now is the city of East Grand Forks. It's a $140 million project in Minnesota, and you have a comparable project in the Grand Forks, North Dakota. And the non-federal share is about $60 million. The city had no capability to match that, to split that 60, 30 million local and 30 million state. So after the 97 flood, when these projects were evolving, there was a rider language passed that provided for this requirement for the local government's obligation to be limited to 2% of the median household income. And we've used that in East Grand Forks, Warren, Breckenridge, the other communities listed here. So we wouldn't exceed the local capability, basically, and we could leverage the federal money.
Mr. Chairman, like I said, I didn't have any objection to that, but I'd like to see a breakdown of the distribution of those dollars and to those different communities. He should know what they are if we got a request in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I can provide that, and we can provide it to the committee so you have something to look at in paper. Essentially, there's three projects right now. The city of East Grand Forks, $11 million was in the governor's budget. Breckenridge was $3.25 in the governor's budget. And Montevideo was $1.98 million. Those were the three that were identified in the governor's budget. Those communities have all contributed their 2%. So basically, for the ongoing project, it's essentially all at state cost.
Mr. Chairman, we'd have been better off to take East Grand Forks and move it.
Hopefully, committee members will be good students of history, Representative Solberg, so we don't repeat some of our past mistakes.
Mr. Chairman, I think part of the state paid was I want to say $1 million to a sporting goods company to build a nice facility in East Grand Forks. Of course, they're probably the ones that don't want a tax increase, too. I mean, they're there for the subsidy.
I have a question to follow up on the flood hazard mitigation projects, and how do we classify flood hazard mitigation projects as floodproofing homes in Golden Valley in Minneapolis?
Mr. Chairman, the flood hazard mitigation projects are fall into three general categories. One are the federal projects where we try to leverage federal funds. The second is removing homes or structures from repetitive flood damages. So that's the request that you see from Minneapolis, Golden Valley. There were bills heard on Invergrove Heights and St. Louis Park. Those projects are taking repetitive loss structures and either acquiring them and removing them from the floodplain or doing work so they are protected from future flooding.
How do homes in Golden Valley get into the floodplain?
Mr. Chairman, it's the homes along Bassett Creek.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Silver.
Can I be a little bit critical of one more thing? There was a request made and a bill was introduced. I don't have the House file number on it. I did not receive a hearing for the Canisteo pit flooding potential. And unless something is done on that, you will have another huge grant to buy out a bunch of homes that will be flooded by rising level of a pit. In fact, it is so critical right now that the railroad, Burlington Northern, has quit using the tracks because the waters, and this is outside the city of Bovee, have risen to the point and have eroded the bank in such a way that the railroad will no longer use the railroad and have a lawsuit filed against the city of Bovee for restoration of and getting their bank. They're very afraid of losing a train going down, having it wash into a pit that's 200-300 feet deep. And it wasn't even on the list of anything that was considered. So we'll have to express disappointment in that.
What are you talking about?
And Mr. Chairman, that was one that they're working strongly with the Corps of Engineers to do that. And I think they're
a bill.
They just need some help on that.
Representative Howes, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Loxamo, I just have a clarification on the rider, on the language part of the bill, page 1, line 22. It is correct, the Grand Marais Creek Flood Reduction Project in the Red Lake Watershed District. So there is a creek way over there that's called the Grand Marais Creek?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Howes, that's correct.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, to Representative Solberg, we need to talk about what you're referring to because none of us recall that bill being introduced or being presented.
Chair, I'll follow up with you.
Okay, Representative Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mr. Loxamo, on the Golden Valley issue in Bassett's Creek, has any work been done to look at whether the creek is daylighted in the part that's running in North Minneapolis to the Mississippi River, if that would relieve any of the flooding issues?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kelleher, not that I'm aware of. You know, we did a big federal flood control project with Bassett Creek to put the majority of the flow in a deep tunnel and take it to the river. This project is for some homes further upstream where the creek is obviously daylighted, and it's just floodproofing three homes.
Other questions regarding the flood hazard mitigation grants? If not, let's continue, Chair Osmond.
The next item that was on the governor's list was the dam repair and reconstruction removal. Recommended $1 million. We are recommending $1,200,000. We have $200,000 that we are have a rider in the bill on for remove a dam at Rush Creek in Chisago County and restore the river channel and floodplain in that area. And so that's our recommendation on that.
Okay, let's just keep moving down the list unless somebody has a question.
The RIM critical habitat match is was recommended at $4 million. We are recommending $2 million. We felt that the
We also have other proposals in here in the form of wildlife management areas and also the CREP proposals that will heavily impact on the habitat, so we cut back a little bit in the in this particular program.
We have a big spending member from Eden Prairie here. Keep going.
Okay. The RIM Wildlife Area Acquisition is the WMA program, Wildlife Management Areas. That's the governor recommended $12 million. We had $20 million that was we had a bill in for, and the committee recommends going with the governor's proposal of $12
million. Okay, let's just keep going down the list. We'll jump in if
fisheries is slightly. We have that slightly less than the governor's proposal. We are water access is below the governor's recommendations. We thought that $3 million for boat ramps and fishing piers would seem to be adequate. We thought would meet the needs. There's in stream protection is at the governor's recommendation of $500,000. It restores two degraded trout streams and a longer delay in providing this recovery usually generates greater costs and damage, and so we supported that request. The next item is reforestation. Reforestation is below the governor's rec. We actually zeroed this program out. This is a proposal because our recommending zero is because it is normally funded from the general fund. This is one of the first years we've seen it in the bonding requests. The revenues generated from our forests are put into the general fund, and we didn't see any convincing evidence to have us change that practice of having the reforestation dollars coming out of the general fund. Reforestation is statutorily required, and we thought that this was appropriate.
Mr. Chair.
Current practice is an appropriate way to handle that.
Representative Silver.
Mr. Chair, I guess of all the recommendations, this is probably the one that is the most disturbing to me. The closure of the machines at Bland and Paper Company when within the first couple of weeks of the governor's term of office, he traveled to Grand Rapids, had a good meetings with the management, with labor, with the community, and appointed a task force to deal with the forest products industry in general. Keep in mind that it's extremely important for northern Minnesota, but keep also in mind that 50% of the jobs that are created in the forest products industry are located in the metropolitan area. And one of the strong recommendations that the governor's task force came out with was the reforestation. We don't grow a tree overnight. If you wanted to take all the money that is generated to the general fund from the sale of trees and put it back into the planting of trees, we'd be happy with that. But only a small portion of that is ever put back into the planting of trees. And as we look at multinational companies making decisions, particularly in my case, the Bland and Paper Company, with their company that's owned by a Finnish company now, UPM. We know that for a fact that they are going to be increasing their production capacity with new paper machines. And as they make those determinations of whether they locate that machine in Finland or in Brazil or Michigan or in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, we're fighting those other locations for Grand Rapids. And why the way that the company is looking at it are several things. And it not only affects just that one company, because I'm sure companies that are located in Bemidji and in Cass Lake and other parts of northern Minnesota do the same type of thing. But they look at availability long-term of the forest of resource. What kind of fiber are we going to have, and what kind of quality fiber are we going to have? What kind of a transportation system are we going to have? What kind of a regulatory system do we have in the state of Minnesota? And one of the key factors is the long-term viability of fiber. And we don't manage our forests like they do in Finland. We could grow 10 times as much fiber if we did. I don't know if we want to do that or not. But it is extremely important to have a long-term commitment and send a signal to the multinational corporations that Minnesota is committed to a wood fiber industry and a long-term commitment. So that was why the governor recommended it. Again, I'll go back. If you want to take all the money that's put in the general fund from cutting of trees and put it back into planting trees, we'll be happy with that. But that's not the case.
Chair Osmond, you want to respond?
Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg, because this is reforestation is statutorily required, we felt that this would not fall between the cracks and would be taken care of in future activities, and that right now there were higher priorities for the bonding request.
Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Osmond, Representative Solberg touched on almost everything, but I think you mentioned that the past hasn't shown that we've bonded for this type of activity, but I might be wrong, but I think during the Ventura era, we did send out a Knobloch's committee $1 or $2 million in bonding requests for reforestation, and the governor vetoed it. Now, I could be wrong, but I would think if this body has passed legislation like that in the bonding bill and passed both houses and went to the governor, that would be enough in our history to show that we have done it in the past. And while I appreciate the fact that your committee had to make these hard decisions, I would look forward to coming to your committee this year and next year and hoping that out of the general fund you would help bring some money forward for reforestation. The industry is a $7 billion industry with 50,000 jobs, and again, I look at it as asset preservation. If we don't plant the trees, they're not going to grow. If we don't have the trees, we're not going to have the money.
Representative Solberg.
And just one other point of that. We can cut trees and then walk away from it. It'll reforest itself. But it's the type of reforestation that's extremely important for the wood products industry. And that type of reforestation requires an investment on the state.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're all going to zero in on this a little bit, I guess. Representative Osmond, I don't know what the history of this was in last year's bill and anticipating next year's when there's a biennium coming up that doesn't look too good either. I'm assuming this is one of those areas that either was affected by cuts or will continue to be in the future, and so I can see why the department might have seen the bonding bill as a good alternative. My question is, going back to those studies we did to assure a sustainable forest, does this put us significantly behind? We were on a path, I think, to a sustainable forestry, and if we do fall behind in investment, where does it leave us if we either cut them last year or cut them in a future biennium? How does stay on track?
Chair Osmond.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, you make good points. We have the budgeting process that we went through. There has been some reductions in the Department of Forestry, exactly how that impacted on their statutory mandate to provide reforestation. I'm not able to answer right now, but we probably have someone here in the room that can. Someone can give us some insight into that?
Excuse Excuse me. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Tomlinson. I'm the assistant director with the Division of Forestry and DNR. I appreciate the questions. We did take budget reductions last year, actually we've taken budget reductions over the last several years, I think, and we have reduced primarily in the areas of personnel in the Division of Forestry. We are down from about 400 or thereabouts 4 years ago to about 358 or so today, permanent personnel. And that, of course, impacts what we're available and able to do. But I think the real essence of the discussion here is how much dollars do we have available out of what we have left to, in order to put into reforestation activities, which by and large isn't done by Division Foresters. We contract for that with private folks from throughout the country, actually, to come in and do the tree planting, buy the trees, and do the site preparation work that is necessary to accomplish that. And our fiscal year 03 level was about $1.2 million that went into that activity. That was the amount that we had budgeted, and we did have a little carryover money that we were able to put towards that as well, which brought it up some. But generally speaking, out of our direct appropriation of about $32 million, about $1.2 million went into reforestation activities. Our bonding request was to look at expanding reforestation activities above and beyond what we are currently doing for a couple of reasons. One is that we like to think that we could use that million or so that we currently have available in the Division of Forestry and the General Fund and put that towards the maintenance practices of the plantations that are already on the ground. There's a lot of work that needs to be done relative to white pine bud capping and other release work that we call it, either with chemicals or hand release work with sentence of service crews or MCC crews or otherwise, that takes money and capital in order to get out and do that. And that's what we looked at using the general fund appropriation for that. The $3 million of bonding would basically just about double or triple the amount of trees that we're able to put in the ground. And we would look at using bonding money then for all of the site preparation work on 10,000 acres, as I think it mentions in the fact sheets. I'm not sure if you members have the fact sheets in front of you, but there's about 10,000 acres of reforestation with site prep work, and then buying the seedlings to go on that those 10,000 acres and actually having them planted. So I hope that kind of explains, I think, your questions relative to this.
Thank you. Chairman Osmond, let's move on. We've got a lot of territory yet to cover, and committee time.
Last comment with regard to reforestation, Mr. Chair, is that we know that that was a significant initiative of the governor, and so we know we're going deviating from that in that recommendation. Metropolitan Greenways is at the governor's recommendation. These dollars will leverage $1.8 million in non-state dollars, and delays result in increased costs and or elimination of wildlife habitat that this program is designed to protect. The native prairie easements is at the governor's recommendation. The scientific natural areas are at the governor's recommendation. The state trail acquisition is above the governor's recommendation. We have the governor's recommendation on state trails was $2 million. We're recommending $5.7 million. And we have riders in there for several different trails around the state of Minnesota. They are listed, the names of them or the areas are the under the title, and you can see the authors there. And it's the Paul Bunyan Trail was for a bridge to cross a busy highway in Brainerd, so there's a major safety issue there. That was $1.5 million. The Paul Bunyan Trail at the governor's rec to riprap Lake Bemidji to protect the trail from the erosion process that was happening there. That was $400,000. Paul Bunyan Trail also at Bemidji is one piece of a larger project that got vetoed in 2002, and that's at $500,000. The Shooting Star Trail is a critical. It has federal money that will expire in September without funding, and it was also vetoed in 2002. So we're funding, recommending $4.45 million. The Blufflands State Trail is land is the land is owned, but the dollars are for development. It's $450,000. The Goodhue Pioneer Trail, which is partial acquisition, full acquisition will be at $500,000, and we're recommending $200,000 to be put towards that project. The St. Louis Park Pedestrian Bridge, safety issues there also. It's a heavy use area. It also was vetoed in 2002. We're putting that back in at $500,000. And the Old Cedar Avenue Bridge removal, this is a project that when the city of Bloomington took over this bridge back in 1981, they were going to be part of the trail system. It has since deteriorated. They found to try and remove the bridge. We are dealing with lead paint and other hazardous materials that makes the removal very, very costly. And so they're asking for assistance there. They requested $900,000. We have earmarked $200,000 to help with that project.
Chairman Osmond, with regard to the last item you just mentioned, Cedar Avenue Bridge, this is a... I thought there was some discussion about trying to rehabilitate or to keep that that open for biking and pedestrian. That is not the case?
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that that's what they're hoping to do with it, but the bridge has deteriorated to the point that it no longer can be part of that function, that it is actually rusted through in many places, and it is, I believe, closed now because of the safety concerns. So it's personally, I find it difficult to try and propose this for a an environmental project when, in fact, I think it's really more of a MnDOT responsibility to deal with that. I know that they've tried to just turn it over to the city of Bloomington a number of years ago, but it also has significant problems now to try and recover and deal with that. They would have had to have done that at some point anyway. So we tried to get some conversation going with MnDOT on this. I couldn't get a meeting with them.
Thank you,
Representative
Anderson.
That really
shook
me off.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Osmond, I have many people that are on that belong to horseback riding clubs in my area, and they're critical of the fact that they thought that they could use some of the parks and trails that were in Wright County, and they've been told otherwise. Are any of these that are coming forward going to be able to be used for horseback riding?
I don't really know for sure. Does anyone have any information on can help us with that question? We'll have to get back to you on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions regarding state trail acquisition and improvement? Representative Hausman.
Representative Hausman, would, because there were questions about state and metro balance, wouldn't the state trail acquisition amount of $5.7 million in effect balance the Metro Greenway's $1 million? I mean, isn't that a kind of a comparable activity in Greater Minnesota? And
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, it possibly could be, but to be very honest with you, I've not taken a look at this and trying to divide out by region. I feel that the projects have to be there by merit based upon the project, not as to whose district or where they're at, located in the state.
Kind of help Greater Minnesota feel a little better. They do even better.
We can try to break it down and see as to where it actually falls, but it was not our intent nor part of our process.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative House.
Oh, excuse me. I do it,
Gary.
I think we
thank
have
you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Howes, we have a limit on the number of questions that one member can ask during any committee hearing. I think we've counted you up at about 12 so far this meeting, but
well, Mr. Chairman, I've only begun. But I would just like to comment to Representative Howes, but we don't need your help in rural Minnesota.
Ooh, ooh!
Uh-oh.
Don't take that one seriously.
The if
as I look at the suburban area, it's a little different now.
I think we might look on the list. There is the St. Louis Park. Last time I checked, St. Louis Park is in the metro area, is it not?
Okay. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
as is Bloomington. Yes, so. Right. So there are some of these that are in the metropolitan area.
Mr. Chair, you notice I didn't get into that discussion.
Representative Osmond, while we're on the trail issue, on the second page, I believe you have another list of trail projects that are these not in the recommended category, or can you tell us what how your committee dealt with all the other requests that came forward for trail dollars?
Chair, members, we provided you the second list to show you that there were other projects that were in our committee. Some of them were heard in the committee. We did not fund those, so we just wanted to make sure you knew that we just didn't take every project that came through and put it into the bill, that we actually tried to provide some discernment.
Okay, let's continue down the list then.
Okay, next item is the county forest reforestation. The governor's recommendation was $1 million. We are recommending zero. That is also a new program that we did not support at this time. The fish hatchery provisions are slightly below the governor's recommendation. These are needed improvements to maintain fishing stock capabilities in the state of Minnesota, but we felt that they could get by with just a little bit less than their request. The WMA improvements are also below the governor's requests, and I'm trying to spot where I'm at here. $300,000 is what the what we recommended. The governor was at $600,000. We came in at $300,000. The state forest acquisition land, the governor's recommendation is $1 million, and we are at that same amount. The forest roads and bridges was $1 million, and we are coming in at $300,000. The state park acquisitions, this is governor's recommendation at $2 million, and we are also recommending $2 million. The state park is requisitions cover the critical parcels within the current state park boundaries currently for sale or from willing sellers. All acquisition money vetoed in the 2002 current list and was exceeded $6 million. The state park building and development governor's proposal was $3 million. We've recommended 5.8, so we're continuing to support those activities that the governor was supporting, but we also felt that the two provisions in Big Bog State Park development and Grand Portage State Park deserved support. The Lake Superior Safe Harbors, also known as McQuaid, I believe is the term to using, as McQuaid's Landing. That was recommended at $2 million by the governor. We zeroed that out. We felt that that project, the land has been acquired and that this is for development purposes, and we felt they could push that off to another time. The governor did not recommend local initiative grants, but our committee likes local initiative grants. It's competitive in nature, and it also provides for local matching dollars, and we recommended that we put $2.5 million towards local initiative grants, and we did earmark two projects to get attention from those dollars: $500,000 towards South St. Paul, Crosby Park, which is a reclamation, reclaiming some an old demolition landfill that's right along the Mississippi River, and getting some a beginning and getting started to turn that into parkland. And also the Minneapolis Grand Rounds Byway, which is these are dollars to try and help Minneapolis in figuring out how to finish that Grand Round Trailway through their the northern part, northeastern part of Minneapolis, so that you'd actually have a trail that would be continuous throughout the completely around the city of Minneapolis, or inside the city of Minneapolis, but in a full circle. And so they thought that that was a very worthy project, because once you get people on those trails, they would actually be able to go completely around and not have to get all the way up to northern Minneapolis or all the way down the southern area and then turn back. The statewide asset, the governor recommended $2 million. We are supporting that same level. Field office renovations for a DNR is the governor was supporting $1 million. We're recommending $500,000. The office facilities developments, governor's recommending $2.3 million. We're recommending $2 million, and we also have two additional projects that we included that really fell outside of the governor recommendations categories. One is Lake Superior Zoo grant. $400,000 that they've requested, and also the North Shore State Parks reforestation, which is right along the reforestation along the North Shore effort, and we provide $400,000 for that effort. Mr. Chair, that the last item I have on my list is to, unless there are other questions, would be to go back and talk about PREP.
Chair Osmond, the we have requested that the finance committees try to give this committee a rank order of projects. Can you comment to your committee's deliberation on that issue?
We specifically talked about providing that type of ranking. It was the committee discussed it for quite a bit, and they determined that they did not want to provide a specific ranking with regard to these projects. By our funding, the projects indicated support for those projects, and beyond that, it's basically hoping that this committee would call upon our committee to help them as you are trying to prioritize, so we can bring in the information that has been presented to the full committee as you're making your deliberations, and try to help you select the differences that may be between these projects. As you can see, it's very difficult to compare, says we're not really apples to apples type of comparisons almost across the board. So it really becomes judgment calls. They expressed that I asked that this committee consider their assistance, and that they'd be very willing to spend their time to help you produce the best product possible.
Representative Wozniak.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, serving on the committee with Representative Osmond, that concur, we did have that long discussion and decided, because of the complexity and the number of issues, I know several committees have come in with a handful of recommendations. We have many small recommendations, and we felt it was prudent to come in with a package that hopefully the committee would, this committee would consider.
You got a few big ones in here too, though.
Yes,
he said they had a lot of small recommendations.
Oh,
I said they had
There's
a few big ones in there too. Yeah.
Mr. Right. Chair,
Representative Tingelstad.
Mr. Chair, to that point, really on page two, those are the items that are at the bottom of the priority list for environment finance. They fell off the list.
Well, that's. Thank you, Representative Tingelstad. That would beg the next question, is that on page two, are these projects which received neutral recommendations or received negative recommendations? You understand there is a difference in terms of House rules as to how you categorize your recommendations.
Yes, The other list is to indicate that they were heard in our committee and they are the lowest priorities. There was no veto, absolute veto of any project that I'm aware of.
Okay. Let's then, if there's no further questions regarding that issue, let's revert back to RIM and CREP.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. The CREP program is something that has been before you the past couple of days. You've had people that have from the agricultural community as well as from the Board of Soil and Water to kind of explain how the projects or how it actually works or functions. One of the biggest difficulties we've had in trying to deal with this is to get past some of the concerns that people were expressing with regard to permanent easements. Significant property rights type of issue that needed to be addressed. And so as we approach this, the concerns, we wanted to really get this program separated out from agricultural subsidy type program, as it's not designed to be subsidizing agriculture. The governor's proposal that he's presenting is really focusing on water protection. That really came to my attention when I was in telephone conversation with Congressman Gutnick, and he was referring to this as to the CREP program as an ag program, and where it's really a conservation program. That's how it even starts out its title. And so that really triggered something in my mind that we needed to try and focus on the outcome rather than on the tool that we're using to try and reach that outcome. Idling the land is certainly one of the tools that is used in order to try and provide for a water quality protection, but it's not the goal. The goal is not to take land out of production. The goal is to provide water protection. And as we look at the waters of the state of Minnesota, we see that they're public waters. And in this program, we're actually have where the taxpayers are very willing to join with the property owners that are neighboring along those public waters and financially assisting them in a way that they can help us protect our public waters. And that's the reason they present this proposal in this fashion, that we're talking about taking the governor's dollar amounts that he was presenting and that we would have broken down into three separate categories. Starting on page 6, line 55, these easements that would actually be on the land would, first of all, one would be affecting the permanency of wetland areas. That's consistent through all the proposals that you heard, is that there is the state statute requires wetlands to be permanently protected. We're also recognize that should be limited to some extent, because there are a lot of areas in the state of Minnesota that used to be wetlands that have been drained. And so we wanted to try and narrow this right down to the areas that are causing the most negative impact or highest negative impact on Minnesota waters. And so agreeing to limit the wetlands that would be in the program to 24,000 acres. But then going to the second activity, giving the property owners some options out there. Instead of just the one option, like the Agricultural Committee presented, which they were saying that you'd have 15 years of CRP, then you' 'd have another 30 years of CREP, and then that'd be a total of 45 years, and then the program disappears. This particular one asks for a total of 50 years, which is a combination of 15 years of CRP, and the state would have the RIM programs and extend out for 35 years. And we would then have, so there is that very similar program that the property owner would have in his or her selection with regard to protecting Minnesota waters. The new part of this proposal is what we call legacy conservation. And what we're saying there is that we would actually go into the first 15 years of CRP, and then you'd have 20 years of the CREP program, which is a total of 35 years. After that 35 years, if the technologies have changed, if the abilities have land practices have changed to where they can provide the water protection that we're originally asking for, essentially that's what the state of Minnesota is trying to buy here in the CREP program, is water protection. And if we're able to provide that water protection, we then allow for the property owner to purchase those developmental rights back and be able to put that land in back into production that would be consistent with providing that water protection. So it's really the focus is on water protection in the future, and that's the biggest change in how this proposal addresses those issues. We also have the portions of the contract that would recognize we want to go after the most vulnerable lands. We want to narrow down. Keep in mind we have just a limited amount of money, both at the federal and state level, to deal with this issue. So we want to try and go after the most highly erodible lands. We want to get those that are very marginal in nature. We're proposing that they have to be within at least a third of a mile of a ditch or a lake or a river. So we really are going after lands that have an impact on water. because the whole focus of this effort should be on protecting our waters. The only exception to that would be in the Red Lake or Red River area, where we are concerned about flood damage control up there. So their concerns and what they're trying to handle with the CREP program is a little bit different than we have in southeastern, southwestern Minnesota. The contractual agreement between the landowner and the Soil and Water Conservation District, and that's another thing that's unique about this, is we're dealing with the local organization, not Bowser, but you have the local Soil and Water Conservation District people actually dealing with the landowner on what it is we're trying to protect. And so as they enter into the agreement, they would be identified as to what type of protection we're really purchasing here for the state of Minnesota for our waters. So then as, and that would go into a conservation plan, and they would have haying rights, grazing rights that would all be worked out. Matter of fact, in the outline of this proposal that I had, we've been promoting rotation grazing, because that's a wonderful way to provide conservation and yet maintain the economic viability of that land and be able to have it continue to be producing economic benefits. We also want to make sure that the drainways and water management is properly handled, so that if there are property outside of this CREP area, that has to be addressed, as to if that water is flowing through a potential CREP property, you have to decide how you're going to deal with that before you actually enter into an agreement, because we do not want it to have a negative impact on somebody else's property. The agreements are not to alter any of the existing legal drainage rights of enrolled landowners. A landowner choosing a buyback to and use rights of the land under the conservation easement may do so at the appraised value of the land usage restrictions in the contractual agreement. And this would be any time after the 35 years. This is not a window at year 35. This is any time after 35 years. So actually, this legacy type of an approach, by protecting waters, we try to provide more flexibility on how that land can be managed and provide the landowner more options than if they entered into any of the other proposals that have been put on the table at this point. So the that also is true with regard to the change or protection of the floodwater damage conditions. What we're really focusing on up there is how to properly protect from flood damage in the Red River Valley area. The money that's collected from any type of a buyback would go into a conservation account. Keep in mind, this is going to be 35, 40 years out, and that would go into, or more, and it would go into a conservation account to provide for purchasing of habitat on agricultural land. This is because we know that the organizations and people that are supporting this overall program are doing it for more than just water protection. They're also very concerned about habitat and trying to protect wildlife. And so what we're trying to do is to have a mechanism where, even if we're able to, through technology or creativity management practices, continue to protect the water, and the land is really freed up to go back into production, that we'd also have those dollars and continue in protecting habitat or providing habitat long-term. And before any agreement is entered into a written, a landowner bill of rights must be prepared by the Board of Water and Soil Resources and given to the interested landowner. This is so no one will enter into any of these programs without really knowing what their options are, what the pluses and minuses can be, so that they really have people entering into this from a really solid base of knowledge. So, Mr. Chair, try to address each and every one of the points that have been raised with regard to objection. In my conversations with many of the parties that are dealing with this, I've asked if any of them are against permanently protecting Minnesota waters. Keep in mind, we have a tremendous amount of water in the state of Minnesota, a lot of shoreline. If we are going to have to go back and reprotect that same stretch of shoreline every 45 years, it's going to be a never-ending task, and the taxpayers of the future are going to continue to pay more and more and more for that protection that we're going to expect with regard to basic quality of water in the state of Minnesota, which we know is central to our economy and central to the basic needs and quality of life that we have in our state. We want to leave that to future generations. Going towards the project in this type of fashion, I believe, can provide that long-term impact and get us away from the idea that we're trying to control what people are doing on their land. We're not trying to control what they're doing on their land. We're trying to provide water protection. The best tool we know today is to through land use control. But in the future, that may change. The course of a river may change. Many things may change. This provides for that flexibility so that the landowners can then enjoy their property to the maximum extent possible, but yet maintain the public interest of protecting Minnesota's waters.
Chairman Osmond, I appreciate all the time you've spent on this issue. Let me raise a concern I'm sure that you've heard. We have this little provision in the state of Minnesota. It's called the Constitution. Constitution says leases and grants of agricultural lands for a longer period than 21 years reserving rent or service of any kind shall be void. You want to explain to me how you get around the Constitution?
I can't explain it to you, but I know that the Attorney General can. And the Attorney General has written an explanation as to how this that particular provision does not apply in this case. And I would hope that it really does not for the sake of our agricultural community. We have easements on things such as drainage rights and so forth that we certainly wouldn't want to have the ditches have to disappear every 21 years. It would be just, I think, very devastating in the state of Minnesota if that particular type of provision really impacted on how we're dealing with our water protections and water management.
Well, Chairman Osmond, as you know, the Attorney General can write all the opinions he wants. I think that's why we have that other branch of government called the judicial branch of government that gets to interpret the Constitution. So, in a ditch, I think technically isn't that deemed to be a waterway?
Mr. Chair, but it's the easement issue is what you were pointing out, not necessarily the particular use of the land. You're saying an easement is limited 21 years.
No, it says leases. Leases and grants. So, anyway, I'm just saying that we're talking about once again. I saw the governor the other day. I suggested that he maybe sit down and read the Constitution, maybe familiarize himself with a little bit more, because he seems to be making several proposals. One concerning improvements of private property, and the other one in this area that seem to be rather diametrically opposed to what the Constitution says. And I'm just, as I said, I'm certainly not a constitutional scholar. I'm not even a lawyer. I just wonder how people are proposing to get around this provision in the Constitution.
And Mr. Chair, as you know, I'm not a lawyer either, but the governor is. And I also know that
I think that's part of his problem.
I think that the Attorney General is, and they are of like opinion. And I would really hope that they're correct, because anyone that would raise the issue could really be jeopardizing a lot of accepted activities that are currently going on in the state of Minnesota if they wanted to apply that to all easements in the state of Minnesota. It's a dangerous road to go down, I think so. I have no doubt that that it is legal, it is constitutional for us to continue with these programs.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Obviously, a huge amount of work has gone in it, and from the product, it looks like all the players have been at the table on this. Do you know, is a similar conversation going on in the Senate already? Have you all been, has everybody sort of been at the table for the duration, or... Do we still have a long road up
out
here?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, there's always a long road to hoe in this type of activity, but we have tried to have all the stakeholders at the table, or representatives of those stakeholders. What the Senate will actually do, I'm not certain, but I have had opportunities to spend considerable time with a number of individual senators and explain the proposal and kind of where we are at in the process. And so far it has significant support from the leadership, or individuals that are in environmental and agricultural leadership in the Senate.
Are there any further questions? Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What Congressman Gutnick's reaction is.
I really thank you for that question, Representative Erdahl, because I cannot understand why Congressman Gutnick, who I served with many years here, thinks that when he goes to Washington, D.C., he can start to dictate to the state of Minnesota what our decision should be. I think it's absolutely outrageous to see this federal government come in here and try to dictate to us as legislators what we can do, not only when we're following all the rules and regulations that they put in place. We're doing all that. The proposal I have before you does all that. But then they're going to have the discernments on those activities to where they could actually try to cut us off from being able to be available to those particular funding assistance. And I'm shocked that that Congressman Gutnick has really taken that route. I don't understand. I thought we'd be at the table and be able to negotiate. I thought he had very legitimate concerns about easements, you know, and property control issues, and taking idling land when it was not necessary, and so forth. And I wanted to address those, but have not been even given the opportunity to discuss it with him, because he cuts me off as I try to talk to him about it.
Chairman Osment, last time I checked, there's a fairly substantial amount of federal money that would be involved in these programs. So if it's federal money, don't you think that federal lawmakers, they seem to be able to get us to dance on a string when it comes to drunk driving legislation, education issues, and the like. Why would this issue be any different?
And Mr. Chair, collectively, I understand we do the same thing collectively together as a legislature. But when Congress has spelled out the rules, they spelled out what it is that you're supposed to actually comply with, and you do that, and then you have an individual congressperson come in and try to change those rules and try to redesign your program. That's what I'm objecting to. Mr. Chair, you and I, we may disagree on how things should be done, but once we settle something around these tables and we get it signed by the governor, we all live by those rules. And I don't understand how this one gets changed. I'm just dumbfounded as to that type of influence that not only from congressional level, but also from appointed individuals in the state of Minnesota and the influence that they seem to want to have on our system and our process.
Well, as maybe you can enlighten me a little bit, but our former colleague Representative Gutnick, but is it not does not Congressman Peterson have similar type views to Congressman Gutnick? Or I haven't been in conversation with either one of them, so enlighten me as to the position that Congressman Peterson has taken.
I've been in conversation with both, Mr. Chair, and it's difficult to know exactly where the rub really is and what the problem really is. I've not been able to nail it down, but you're correct. We do seem to be getting pressure from more than just one congressperson.
Did you want one of your committee members to give us further enlightenment?
I would. Representative Cox has spent a tremendous amount of time on this on the CREP issue. He is the author in the House, and if it's okay, I'd like to take a minute and let him address the committee.
Okay. Representative Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Representative Osment has done a great job outlining the CREP bill. As many of you know, this has taken lots of turns and twists along the way. I think we've got a good option here with including the legacy easement option in here, and it's clearly identified that this is a water quality bill. This is not an ag bill, and I want to stress that, and I also want to stress that this is voluntary. As you raised concerns, Mr. Chairman, on how some of these programs work and are there rights being taken and so forth, and with a voluntary program like this, I think we're assured of that. And the second thing I wanted to address, Mr. Chair, yes, I do have the Constitution, the page in here, Article 1, Section 15, that deals with leases, and I also have the Attorney General's opinion on that. And I'll just read the one part on it. It says that the easements do not involve an agriculture use or place an ongoing obligation on the state to provide rent payments or services to the underlying property owner. And that's his opinion, that it That's the difference between an agricultural lease and an easement that is put in place for water quality standards, as Representative Osmond has outlined that CREP does. And lastly, I guess I would just add that we have had a history of Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, and I'm not aware of any challenges to the easements that have been put in place, and we've had it for a period of years now. So I think this is a good program, and I think it should be supported, and you're absolutely right, Mr. Chairman. There is a substantial amount of federal money that will accompany this, and I have a letter in my file from Congressman Klein, who's a great supporter of the program the way it's designed. So we have balances.
Does Congressman Klein sit on the
Ag Committee?
Ag Committee?
No. No, he does not. And this is not an ag bill.
Where are the federal funds coming from?
Yeah.
It's in ag legislation, but it's actually trying to protect waters, and it's not it's a conservation.
Well, let me ask both of you, since I presume, Chairman, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Chairman Osmond, but you agree this is not an ag bill. This is a water quality bill.
This is not an ag subsidy bill like the CRP program is really designed to do, is to take land out of production for economic benefits. This is actually trying to focus on, it, according to the way the governor has presented the plan to the federal government, is to target it towards water quality issues.
Have either of you read a recent study by University of Minnesota Duluth indicating that the most pressing water quality issue, or at least according to this study, that the largest water quality concern is from birds fouling the water, has nothing to do with agriculture or stream erosion or et cetera. It's waterfowl that foul the water.
I have not read that. I heard that on the radio yesterday, though, Mr. Chairman.
So should we shoot the birds? We can take care of the water quality problem. We'll shoot the birds.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think it can present as to what it is that we're actually looking for from the what they're trying to detect. If they're talking about fecal coliform, I can understand where that may be an impact. If they're talking about phosphorus, I think you'll find a more recent study that would actually show that one of the biggest contributors is erosion. And that's where a great deal of our phosphorus is coming from in our state waters. So we have many different studies out there that we can really benefit from, but they need to be looked at as to what it is they're actually targeting with their specific research project.
Well, this is, as I understand, it's a fairly recent study. I think, as I said, it just released here within the last couple of weeks or so. So
mine too.
It is a recent one, so... Representative Cox, you said that you have the opinion from the Attorney General. Would you just give us the last paragraph of what that opinion says?
I don't have the full opinion with me, Mr. Chairman. I just have the summary. The part I read, you mean? I just have the summary on it. It's a 5-page, and I just have the summary of it.
Okay. Well, anyway, if there are there any further questions, Chairman Osmond, Representative Cox, regarding this issue or any others that were before their committee? I guess not. So, again, thank you for all the work committee and your committee members.
We really appreciate your time.
Members, Representative Tingelstad, you want to move the minutes from the March 9th meeting?
Chair.
Any additions, deletions, corrections? If not, all those in favor, all those remaining who are in favor of the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those who are opposed, minutes are adopted, meetings adjourned.